Can I just say that I wanted to share this word, so it's probably pretty apt this morning, that last week I said this, and this was going through my world this week, all right? Because I looked up, I said last week, Jesus says this to you, look up, lift up your eyes and see already. I spoke last week from the woman who was in, the woman at the well, Jesus, meeting her in Samaria. And what happened was that the Lord took the disciples on a journey. They were going from Galilee, no, they were going from where they were through Samaria to Galilee. And I said that the disciples never went that way. They found themselves in a place where they never thought that they would be. Because on that journey, what always happened was the Jews would take a 1 or 2 day extension so that they wouldn't go through Samaria, because the Samaritans were not people that they hung out with. They didn't do any commerce. They didn't do any trade. They didn't do any interaction. And the Samaritans, in the eyes of the Jews, were nothing more than half-breeds. They weren't even human. And what happens is Jesus plays with their head, and he says, right, there was a couple of things I said last week. I said he plays with their heads and he brings them into Samaria, and they're freaking out because in their world they never thought that they were going to be there. They never thought that they would be in this place, and certainly not talking to an adulterous half-breed, the woman at the well. I mean, it really pushed all of their buttons. It's like, I never thought I would ever be here. I don't want to be here. Remember I said they had that Father Ted cup of tea moment when all the Samaritans start to come and they go, oh, what we'll do? Have some food. Lovely, like we do here. When the whole world is crashing down. Cup of tea? Cup of tea. Oh, cup of tea. Cup of tea sorts all ills in Northern Ireland, doesn't it? And so you see the disciples go, give them some food because the Samaritans are coming and I don't really know what to do about it. And what Jesus does is a masterclass. And because he does two things simultaneously. He shows his disciples, like that, and that's you and me, what it means to follow him, and simultaneously sets a woman free from years and years and years of heartache and pain. She had 5 husbands, and now she's with her 6th one that she's not married to, but living with. And these things happen, you know, that at the same time where he sets her free, and she is so radically changed after encountering him that she brings the whole village out. But also then he says to the disciples, look, you see, you live with your head somewhere else. You thought you were going to Galilee, but you're right here. And the problem is when you're right here because you don't want to be here, because you never thought you were going to be here, is you don't see what's right in front of you. So he says these 3 things. Look, lift up your eyes and see. It's like Jesus saying, when he says things in threes, he really means it. He's almost going, will you listen up? Look, lift up your eyes and see. Already the fields are white under harvest. He's going, you might be living somewhere else, but already right now, I am putting things in motion. Your life with me is not some kind of tomorrow la-la land. It's an adventure today. And if you can't lift up your eyes and see what's right in front of you, you're going to miss it. Do you know that this week the Lord had, I mean, so I preached that last week. So I thought this week when I was going through my stuff, what's right in front of me? What is there right in front of me? And will I lead people to an encounter with Jesus? Now, obviously, in my context this week, I couldn't be explicit about it. But where I could, I just said, Lord, if it's right in front of me, I'm going to have a go at it. You know, I'm not going to live tomorrow with the hope that somehow my numbers will come up in the lottery. Not that I do the lottery. No, I don't. Actually, can I just be honest? I don't. But no, with that kind of fingers crossed mentality of going, seriously, well, maybe. Like, what have you put right in front of me? And do I care really enough about these people or this person to really share the best news that they will ever hear, ever? Do I really love them enough? Or do I love myself and my own sense of pride and what they... Do I value their opinion of me more than your opinion of them? Lord, that's the question, isn't it? What's more important in the big pecking order here, folks? What they think of me or what the Lord thinks of them? Look, lift up your eyes and see. Already I have put things in motion. It's an amazing story. I loved it. In verse 39, I said last week in the story, it says, come, this is what happens, so many levels, but this poor, I'm calling her an adulterous half-breed because that's exactly what was in the hearts and the minds of the people. Like, keep her away from me. We don't even talk to you. And Jesus says, after he just encounters her and he loves on her and he respects her and he heals her and he sets her free from that root of condemnation. She says, come and see a man, I love this, that told me all I ever did. Come and see a man that told me all I ever did. But she walked away with hope. When see, the thing is, with the message of grace that God has given us in this church, is that what people come to God and they expect to walk away with their head down, with no sense of what the Lord said, Jesus, and how, what an impact he makes on their life. They think they're going to walk away feeling worse than when they came, so that's why they stay away. Do you get that? Why would I come to your God for you to make me feel worse than I already do? Why would I come away with more stuff laid on me when I'm trying to find answers and solutions? And we look at Jesus as he's flowing in grace, and the woman is so completely turned around, and she goes, seriously? She runs, and I love it. Can you just imagine the disciples going, what the is going on? There's millions of, well, not millions, there's a whole village of them coming. Look, lift up your eyes and see, all the half-breeds are coming right to you, and they're going to encounter, and you're like, seriously? 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 All because they met Jesus. Oh, can I just encourage you? Can I really encourage you? The same Jesus that did that with that woman in the well is the same Jesus that lives in you today. He's the same one that you carry with you. And he still says to people, come and meet me and you'll walk away with hope. Where is it possible in the world today? This is not even my talk. This is just me off the cuff. But where is it possible today? Anywhere. To have somebody look at you square in the eyes. Remember I said that grace doesn't duck the issue with people. Grace doesn't empower you to sin. Grace actually leads you away from sin. But grace is real. When Jesus is able to look at you in his love, and it doesn't matter what. One of the interesting things we were doing this week, I'm going to bore you very slightly, but there's a bit of a kind of management speak out there. It's called Jahari's Window, okay? Has anyone ever heard of it? Yeah, anyone heard Jahari's Window? So basically what it means is there's four windows in your life. And number one, it's what I see very clearly as I look through. So that's a window. And then somebody else looks through the window and it's what they see about you, but you don't see it, all right? And then there's what you both see, so you both, it's all kind of, and then there's this little part of your world, it's called room three, and that's locked away and nobody's ever going to see that. And I found people this week, this is where I was going, you know, this is the stuff that I keep in here and it's never coming out. What I did, what I think, da-da-da, it's locked in there, baby. No windows, doors locked, and it's done. I don't know what that is for you, but the psychologist people tell us we all have that place. So lock it away and let me work on what I can. And it's almost like, you help me with what I can't see. But this stuff, nah, we're not even going to touch that. And I'm sitting in the middle of it, the preacher and me going, okay, can somebody play the piano? Let's get the Pads of Glory on. Because see that room? That's the room where Jesus says, come and let me look right into it and you're going to walk away with hope. Like into the darkest bowels and the recesses of our lives, he looks right in and says, let me give you hope. Into the middle of the frustration, the hurt and the pain, let me give you hope. Into the lack of hope, the anxiety and the stress, let me give you hope. Into that bit that's locked away so we can put our masks up so nobody can see past it, let me give you hope. I mean, I'm going to look right into it, the Lord says. I'm going to look square into it because I'm not afraid of it. Why? Because my love is bigger and greater and stronger still. And there is nowhere on this earth that people will ever find that kind of love. It's not possible. It's not possible because every kind of love outside of the agape love of God is conditioned on something or someone or some performance, but not his love. Come and meet a man who will tell you everything about yourself and you'll walk away with hope. That locked away room. Is that not good? Is that not the gospel? Is that not the gospel? Is that not the good news? So people don't come to us and go, hey, let me meet that God. Let me meet that Jesus. I don't want to meet the judgmental, critical one who makes me feel bad or the completely irrelevant one. But honestly, lead me to this guy. Let me encounter this guy. Because God knows these people need hope, like you and I. Yeah? Oh, man. That's grace, is it? No? See, if it's not, we're all completely screwed. And we might as well go home. Too straight. Did I just say screwed in church? I am sorry. But that's the truth, isn't it? It's like, and the Lord said to me this week, what's more important, their opinion of you or my opinion of them? Which one is it? Take a risk. Because I sat and had dinner with somebody this week who I've had time with, but this is the first time I've had one-on-one with her, and thinking, actually, I get my choice in this moment to either mask up or to act with some kind of authenticity and go, can I just tell you a little bit about, do you know what happened? The first time I've worked with this woman, she says, I noticed this about you. Not a believer. Definitely not a believer, for sure. All right? I noticed this. Kind of feel this. And you kind of go, right, in that moment, you can kind of go, oh, it's because I'm lovely. It's because I'm really nice. Or actually, is there something about the Spirit of God that you carry? That people who are in darkness, when they feel that bit of light that touches them and they want to know more, but yet we walk away because, you know, I just don't want to show myself up, or I don't want you to think I'm weird. God, he loves them. Let them encounter Jesus, will you? Let's just bring them to Jesus, and he'll change them and love them. But you bring them. But what I want to say today is this. God never sets you up to fail. Highly ironic, I believe, because one of the things for me is to have that woman who goes to Jesus and says, look, you know, I met a man here who knows all about me, someone who knows me, but not just knowing me, he had the power to fix me and cover me and love me, not for what I had done, but for who I was. The first time that woman encountered that in real life, she was radically changed forever. That's grace, folks. That's the first time she ever, ever, ever had experienced that. She knew about men. She knew what men were capable of, and she had experienced men in all sorts of situations. But, you know, when she met this man, he fixed her. He absolutely fixed her. And so it's interesting that even that woman had a choice. She had a choice to turn from God, or she had a choice to turn to him. And I want to say this, that, you know, I had in my heart this week that some of us just need to breathe a little and relax a bit, because you might not have ever thought that you would be where you are today, but his grace never fails. His grace never fails. His grace will always help you to relax and breathe. And this morning, I just want to quickly talk about this. I want to talk about the fact that that wherever you're at right now, God is not designing failure for your life. Do you get me? Some of us live with something inside of us that goes, God, am I going to fail? Is this not going to work out? But God never sets up his children for failure. And I just want to talk about that and what it means in grace and how you can walk away from here I with a sense of hope in your life to go, God, I might be in Samaria here. I never thought I was going to be here. I'm trying to look, lift up my eyes and see, but I'm right in the place where I didn't think I was ever going to be. Now, what's that going to look like? You know, how do I breathe and rest and relax in a place where I never quite thought I would turn out? Do you get me? I was reading this week in Lamentations, which is an interesting one. You don't really hear many preachers do series on Lamentations, do you? Oh, it's a great book. You know, just picture for a moment. What would you guys feel like if I said, Lord just spoke to me and I'm going to do 6 months on Lamentations? Like, you seriously? It'd be flipping awful, wouldn't it? You'd be like, seriously? Who's read, okay, show of hands, honesty in the room, who has read Lamentations recently? Ever? Kind of. Tried it, was thoroughly depressed by verse 4. So, I mean, even the name Lamentations kind of means really depressed or something in Hebrew, doesn't it? Like wailing and bawling. And all. Anyway, there's this cracker verse right in the middle of Lamentations 1, verse 9. That's how far I got. And then I thought, Lord, you've given me enough. I don't need to go any further. Thank you, Jesus. So, and it was this, she did not consider her destiny, therefore her collapse was awesome. She didn't consider her destiny, and therefore her collapse was awesome. There is a sense of when you're in Samaria and you thought you were on your way to Galilee, that if you do not consider what you're called for, that when the circumstances of right here and now are big and in front, and you're thinking, I never thought I'd be here, that if you do not consider what he's called you for, your collapse will be awesome. It's not that God's willing it, it's just that you lose sight of Jesus in the middle of it. And when you take your eyes off Jesus, like Peter when he gets out of the boat, you start to sink. And when we're sinking, sometimes we go, God, is this what you had for me? Seriously? Is this what you designed for me? But it's like, no. You consider your destiny, and when you consider the calling and the purpose that God has for you, it doesn't matter where you are, it always keeps you looking forward. It always keeps you looking at what he's called you for. And some of us feel like there's a bit of a collapse because we've stopped considering our destiny. Destiny simply means this. What was I put on this world for breath for? Part of that was to reach people, folks. You know, it's part of you will always feel a little bit like you're not fitting, or you're a little bit like not at peace when you're not flowing in, not what God has, you know, not what you think you have for God, but what he has for you, which is encounter people, help them to grow in his love, help them to discover their gift, and for goodness sake, to get them involved in a community of believers called the church, which has an eternal purpose to change this world before Jesus comes back. I mean, that's it. Pretty simple, isn't it? I mean, you have to be quite thick not to get that. So what I want to say is this, you're going to behold what you become. In 2 Corinthians 3:18, it says this, but we all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. Can I ask you this morning to reflect on your week that's just passed? And what did you reflect on? What did you behold? My goodness, this is a challenge for me. Because I find myself time and time again not resting in the grace of God because I behold everything in everybody else. Let me Greek this up for you because it's really awesome. Those of you who know me know I like a little bit of Greek. And it says, behold is the word katapritzo. It means, actually, I reflect, all right? It's mirror. The word is image, which is icon. Now, I did a bit of reading around this because what I thought was, what am I beholding? What am I thinking on? What am I dwelling on? Why am I out of rest? Why am I out of peace this week? Why am I not considering the purpose for which God has called me? Do you get that? Do you ever find that? And just in the run of the week? And actually, I found some really good stuff. Okay, because whenever he says, behold Jesus, now listen to this. This is grace in his perfect, and almost he perfectly described. It says, it assumes a prototype. Okay, so you reflect a prototype. And it's not that you merely resemble what you're beholding and reflecting, but you're actually drawn from it. This is a guy called Trench. So the word icon, as you behold Jesus, means this, that it's more than you're simply a shadow of what you're beholding, but instead, you are a replication. Now think about that for one moment. What Paul's trying to encourage people here is this. This is why he says, fix your eyes upon Jesus in Hebrews 12, verse 2. Because the degree to which you will live out the calling for God has in your life and live out in this rest and peace will be determined by your revelation of Jesus. Because the rest and the peace that woman found was found directly in him and not in anything else. So can I ask you, what did you behold this week? I'm trying to encourage you to go, actually, whenever you look at Jesus, it's not that you merely resemble him. When you were born again as a believer in Christ, you were drawn from, and you are absolutely, he's the prototype, and you were drawn from him, so you're not a shadow. See, we feel like we're a shadow of what Jesus is like, but he says, look at him, and you're the absolute replication of who he is. Do you get that? So what does that mean for you? It means that if I, on a Tuesday morning, when the rain is lashing against my windies, all right? I do that for the internet because people listen from all around the world and they go, Windies? Google Windies, what is that? Okay. Just playing with them, stick it out. So they're Googling Windies. And when the rain is bashing against your windies and you're thinking, seriously, what's going on here? It's like in those moments, we get to choose whether or not we're going to reflect all that he is or all that somebody else is or all that we think we are. What do we sit and behold? Do you consider under grace that you are the absolute replication of Jesus? So all the peace, all the love, all the forgiveness, all the hope, all the strength, all the healing, actually, you're just reflecting that. Or do you draw in and go to something else? What is it? That's why he says, keep your eyes on Christ. Don't reduce this to knowing things about Jesus, because anyone can do that. You know, sometimes I've said to you before, I stand in awe as people take lumps out of each other on Facebook about theology and positions. I'll see when the elections are going on. Make sure you vote this week as well, by the way. Whatever way you vote, make sure you vote. Men and women have died to bring you that vote, and I believe that it's a responsibility of believers to take that vote and to use it. If you want to do whatever you need to do, but make sure you register, because there's many men and women and believers around the world who do not have the opportunity that you have. Just my own process. It's not a word from the Lord, but that's what I think. Because what I think is this. I think when I look at people taking lumps out of one another and this, that, and getting all hot and bothered under the collar, I just kind of go in the middle of that, God. I just don't want to know stuff. I want to experience and live you. And I'm only ever going to do that as I reflect, as I behold you, as I look at you and what you say about me. So when I get this revelation of who Jesus is, I allow that reality to begin to flow in my life. It will start to transform me. I don't need to try. I need to stop trying and really lean into trusting. Because that work that he did in me, as imperfect as I may feel, when I do not consider it, there's collapse. That's what lamentations mean. When I don't consider it, there's collapse. But when I fix my eyes on Jesus and on his beauty, and I see that I am a replication of that under grace, then what happens is I start to lean in to everything that he is in me. Does that make sense to you? So this week I had a fairly, it was quite a high level piece of work that was going on. High level in terms of the people who were there. I'm all much more clever than me, but I had to facilitate it. And I tell you what, that tightens you. You kind of go, oh, talk about bluffing with a pair of twos. You kind of think this is the moment where they find out that I am actually thick. You know what I mean? It's like, my goose is well and truly cooked. Stick a fork in me, I am done. This is the point where it's all going to collapse. And you know that you have those dreams where you're standing naked in front of your class? And you know my recurring dream is, you don't have those dreams, no? Please, God, somebody tell me you have those dreams. Anybody? No? Actually, this is a moment. There is something wrong with me, love. You have been right all along. No? What about, I always have this dream that I am about to fail my French A-level, which I didn't, but I mean, that I have, I wake up in a sweat sometimes going, I haven't revised for my French A-level. No? Oh, flippin' Nora. help me out. Anyway, this week, in those moments, I found myself going, having to lean in to what he's replicated in me and going, Lord, I really need peace in this because I am really nervous about it. I really want this to go well because I don't want to look like a fool, but I really need help. I had that conversation in my hotel room this week and saying, God, I'm leaning in. I'm really leaning in here. And the Lord said to me this, did I not open the door for you to get here? Did I not create a circumstance where you could have somebody very skilled to come and help you? Yeah. Have you got my favor on your life? Yeah. Is Jesus worried right now? No. Is Jesus capable right now? Absolutely. What are you beholding then? And I was beholding me. I was beholding my inadequacy. I was beholding my sense of pride. I was beholding my not wanting to look like a moron. I was beholding me. And he said, well, why don't you fix your eyes on me? And honestly, after 20 minutes, it felt like in my room of going, God, you've got this. You have got this. And can I just say, I was pretty stressed out about that for over a week. Is it okay to be that honest? I preached last week, but inside, after I'm preaching, I'm going, I've got this thing to do this week, and I was worried about it. And then I kind of think, why didn't I do that way before, that whole sit under grace and rest thing? It's because when I behold everything other than Jesus and I fix my eyes everywhere else, there is collapse in my life. But the Lord never intended that for me. What are you beholding? That moment of the Lord going, do you really think I'm worried about Jahari's window? Seriously? I'm going to room 3 in these people's lives and I'm going to go to the darkest place and give them hope. I've got this. Will you just rest? Can I just say we had a brilliant 2 days? Really, really productive, really good. And I actually felt quite energized. That's lunchtime on the second day when it's just about to finish and you go, oh, thank God we got through that and I haven't been caught out. But actually it was more than that. It was like, this was really good. And I actually felt like, you know what, Lord? There's a lesson again for me. Because I in that moment was living with failure in my head. I'm going to fail. I'd lost sight of Jesus. I'd lost sight of his grace. I'd lost sight of rest. I'd lost sight of he had perfectly replicated everything that I needed in me, because as he is full and complete, so am I. He, think about that this week. What is it that you need? It's all there. But will you behold it? Will you allow that to be replicated? Or are you just going to have a good go yourself and see how it works out? What do you think? I have to say that, you know, for me this week, it helped me to breathe. When I thought, instead of reflecting Jesus into my life, I don't want to reflect doubt and fear and cynicism and judgment, and I just want to reflect him in every area, even the darkest bits. But the Lord said to me, Andrew, you can only come into agreement and you'll only release that to your revelation of Jesus. Where's your revelation of Jesus? That's why we preach Jesus in this church and Jesus alone. We don't preach principles or ideas or concepts that are found in somebody else's book. I just try to look at Jesus and go, what is he like? So if I keep my eyes on that and I understand that and the Lord increases that vision in my heart, all that he is going to be replicated and reflected into me every time, every single time. Because he never sets me up for fail. Here's the truth. I love the story. King David's an amazing guy. And David learned before he was in the situation. So if I had read anything about King David in the last 10 days, I probably would have realized that before I was in the situation, I could have learned to strengthen myself in it. I could have learned to breathe and rest a little before the thing ever came. You know, it's like, I've told the story many times from this pulpit about learning how to swim when I was drowning on holiday. Not cool. So when the waves are crashing over your head, it's the worst time to learn how to swim, particularly when you've got one of your kids with you. I'm still a poor swimmer. I remember even before we had children, Penny and I were in a hotel in Canada in Whistler or Banff or somewhere up in the mountains, and it was a really nice hotel, but it was cheap because it was out of season, and there was only three bedrooms on our floor, but we had our own swimming pool, remember this, on the floor, and it was really cool, overlooking the mountains, da-da-da-da-da, and Penny tried to teach me. You know, it was one of those moments, men, as a man, where you kind of go, oh God, she thinks I'm a total drip, I'm a wimp. Because she tried for like 20 minutes to go, just keep breathing, as I went like mad, you know, arms flailing and all the rest of the stuff, sinking like a stone, or maybe going a wee bit forward and then sinking like a stone all the time and thinking, my wife thinks I'm an absolute idiot. And you can see it, it's in their eyes, isn't it, men? You can see it in their eyes. They're going, oh, it's okay, sweetheart, don't worry. But really they're going, what the flip have I just married? He can't even get, like, 10, it wasn't like an Olympic-sized swimming pool, it was like 10 feet, all right? And I was like, by the end, you're trying to suck in my belly and go, it's all right, love. I think I've nearly got it. And you can say, you're right, darling. You know, there. But feeling like a wee boy, just going, I've just let myself down in front of my missus. Now, not enough to actually go and learn how to swim, so to this day, I'm still rubbish at it. And so, but the point is, it's the absolutely worst time to learn how to swim is when the waves are crashing over your head. And this is what David said. You know, when you to know that grace never fails you and you can breathe, what you do is, you do what David did in 1 Samuel 17:36. It says that your land has struck down both the lions and the bears. This uncircumcised Philistine shall be just like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. It's like, you know, for me, what I found is, how do I breathe and rest in the moments where it feels quite tense? Is that I prepare myself before they happen. How do I have the conversation with somebody about Jesus? Is in my mind and in my heart, I resolve that that's what I'm going to do before it happens, so that I'm not caught. You know, many believers don't do that. David grew in grace. He grew in his battles. I don't know what your battle is, but prepare yourself before you get to it. That's the, you know, and understand actually that you're already prepared. And how are you prepared? By beholding Jesus. I mean, how simple is grace and how restful is it? You know, I'm not asking you to go into swim lengths, to run your marathons, to do this. I'm just simply asking you to behold Jesus. Fix your eyes on him, look at him, and get yourself, you know, preparing your head and your heart that you're going to rest in the moments when the pressure comes. And in the moments when the pressure comes, you're not going to resolve to you, or you're not going to go back to what you know or what you have, but in those moments, you're going to breathe a little and just simply replicate and reflect what the Lord has already put in you. It's almost like we say, you've got to prepare. You know, I this week I was in my hotel, you know, and you kind of have some moments, obviously, you know, when you get into your room, you're on your own and you're working stuff out. And I read, and even some well-meaning believers saying, you know what, I was thinking, what's out there in terms of how do you prep? And it's all very worldly. Not many people say, how much time do you simply take to look at who Jesus is and reflect him? It's like, do this, do that, do the other. You know, believers, you need to listen to Graham Kendrick records for 4 hours in the morning, then a wee bit of Joyce Meyer, and then Flip and Nora get into the Creflo Dollar Books, and then you're good to go, all right? And actually, like, what about just look at Jesus and see what he's like? Yeah? Anybody? I'm preparing myself before I get there. I love this. Because what I found as I started to look at that was, the Lord said to me this week, Andrew, in the situation that you find yourself that you never thought you were going to be, he says, I'm not going to ever put you through more. You know, where there's, my grace will cover everything. But if you're learning, the Lord says, you know what? I'm not going to let you fail. My grace loves you enough to lead you to Galilee, but I'm not going to let you fail if you're struggling. I found this really interesting. It was actually in Exodus 13, then it came to pass when Pharaoh said, let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although it was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness and the Red Sea. Let me read that again. This is really important. Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines. That was the quickest route. That was the way to go, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and then they return to Egypt. What that means is this, that sometimes when God looks at us, okay, he wants us to rest and breathe and keep reflecting Jesus. There's times, though, I believe this, that what happens there is that when we go back to ourselves and we're relying on ourselves and we're thinking, how am I going to do this? This is what the danger was here as he led the people of Israel out. He said, if they look at the Philistines, they're not ready yet, okay, to fight this. And they're going to see it and they want to go back to where they came from. How many times do we do that? When we look at things in our own estimation and we go, crap, I'm not doing that, I'm going backwards. Let me go back to where it's safe and where I'm in control. And so what the Lord does, he took them on a bit of a route. You see, what he could have done is he could have led them straight into failure, but he didn't do it. He never sets you up to fail. Under grace, he always is setting you up to grow. He's always setting you up to rest. He's always setting you up for victory. He's always setting you up. Some of you don't believe it. And some of you are looking at your world going, hey, this doesn't feel like the way that I thought it was going to go. But it may just be that under grace, he said, I'm taking you this way because you're not ready for that battle right now. You're not ready for it. And my grace will protect you because I never set you up to fail. But if you're looking at your life going, but I didn't see this. Don't go back then to saying, well, God, is this you? Is this what? But actually to get to that point, you say, Lord, you know, I believe because I'm continually beholding you. I'm continually beholding your goodness and your love. That is the cornerstone of who I am and who you are and who I am. That I will not go to that place where you're unloving and trying to hurt me. Because I know that if this is not reflecting what I believe my purpose and my destiny is, it's because under grace you're giving me room to breathe. Does that make sense? Does it? There's these, you know, you do that with your own kids, don't you? I love the way the Lord said, you know what? I don't want them to go back to slavery. I want them to continue into grace, so I'm going to take them this way. You know, with our kids, we do this. Let me give you the example. There's a place that we go to. We've gone a number of times on holiday. It's called Yubi Land, right? All I can say is that it's in France. Okay, because you're thinking that's an odd place. Never heard of that. And it's basically a million inflatables. I'm exaggerating a lot this morning, aren't I? There's maybe 500,000 inflatables, okay, in this big, by the sea. And it's absolutely fantastic. I should have put some photos up because all the signs are dual French and English, but it's the policeman from Allo Allo who's done the English, all right? Because literally they have Google translated it and they are horrendous. I mean, I just walk around for hours laughing at these signs. Like, so just picture the man, Allo Allo, I would say this only once, and he's the man what did the signs in this place called Yubi Land. But it's interesting because they have inflatables of different sizes. Our Hope was 5 last year on holiday. And she wanted with her big brother to go up to the really high ones. Now, I looked at that as her dad and I made an estimation that she can do it. It's going to push her, but she can do it. She's going to have to really dig in and lean in to a little bit of courage and a little bit of bravery. But with daddy standing at the bottom going, and these things are massive. I mean, they're really, really massive. And you have to climb up in ropes, put your feet into the right holes. And then when you're at the top, you're looking straight down. Because this is like an inflatable park. So they're not like, you know, a wee tiny bouncy castle. And so I remember last year, Hobie, you know, because you can see what happens with kids is they look at it and they go, I really want to do that. Because they see the other kids coming down having a ball. And then they look at what does this mean for me to do that? And they go, I can't. So mom and dad come along and they go, you can do it. I believe that you can do it. So you go for it, Hope. And then my heart, thank goodness the Lord's not like this. My heart is in my mouth as she's halfway up and I can't get up there because I'm too fat. And you're not allowed, okay? And her brother, who obviously when you say at the start, you need to stick in with her, and her brother clears off and scampers up to the top and goes, come on up, what's keeping you in rubbish? I'm going, seriously, Ben, when you try to encourage her? But look at her, she's taking for ages. And you're like, and Hope's halfway, all right? But I knew that she could do it. There was something in me that went, you go for it, girl, because when you get to the top, you are going to love it, all right? And so I stand there and I shout and I encourage and I go, you know what? And Hopi halfway up never thought she'd be there. I said, don't look down, just keep looking up. And she got there. I know when she got there the first time and she came flying down at 100 miles an hour, bumping into kids and yo. And she's a gentle wee thing. She was straight up and at it again. Round and round and round, because she knew, all right? She knew. Now that she had got there, even in the middle of it, though, she didn't. She was just enjoying the flow of it then. And Daddy standing at the bottom going, I hope to goodness Mummy doesn't come, because we're both dead, all right? Because if you see how high these suckers are, I'm thinking, this is a moment where, Hopi, come on, but hurry up, because your man's going to kill me if you don't, all right? But would I have done that if I thought she was going to fall and hurt herself? There's a risk, for sure. Calculated, kind of. I kind of thought, if she does fall, it's going to be sore and embarrassing. But she should be, maybe a broken arm, but she'll be all right. She'll get over it. And don't look at me like that. Don't judge me at this stage, okay? So it's over a year ago. But the thing is, if it was past her, like I didn't send Sophie up. She's too wee yet. Sophie was really happy with where she was, playing at the bottom, and she was resting and finding it easy. But there was something there where I thought, she can do this. She has everything that she needs, and I'm going to be right there to hold her and to catch her if I need to. So you go for it, Hope. I wasn't setting her up. I wasn't trying to embarrass her. I wasn't trying to set her up to fail. I was setting her up for a win, because when I saw her face at the top and going round and round, for me, my heart nearly exploded, and I thought, now there's a moment. There's an event in this wee one's life where she's going, I did it. Come on, Daddy. She actually, do you get me like that? Do you see that? That's the way the Lord deals with you. He's not setting you up for embarrassment or failure or hurt or pain. He's setting you up to win every single time. But your winning is going to come from reflecting Jesus, replicating who he is and all that he is. Let me just finish by saying this, okay? The cornerstone for this is always God's goodness. You know, why do we not breathe and rest a little? Because we allow the enemy to successfully distract us from the fact that we've already been prepared. As he is, so are we. You know, we may feel blindsided at the time, but remembering that God has seen up ahead, has positioned us for victory, is not setting us up to fail, that we have all of Jesus in us, makes a huge difference to how we respond to difficulty. What's the bedrock of that, excuse me, is what's our auto response? It has to be a burning conviction that God is good, that he loves you and that he's full of grace. We're not going to fall into bad theology. You know, and I want to say that this, when you don't consider your destiny, actually for me it's like it's not considering Jesus. And if you're not grounded in God's love, then hardship will shake you from your purpose and you'll flounder. You know, and your ability to connect with what God is doing and hinges on remembering who he is and what he's done in their lives. You know, sometimes if you know what we do is we fail to reflect and go over all that he is, every word that was ever spoken, every verse that was ever given to us, every bit of encouragement that we've ever had. And what happens is actually, can I tell you what happens? That, and I'm just going to use this to finish. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus has got the disciples, and they've just had the whole thing of the loaves and the fishes, right? And they've seen incredible multiplication and people getting fed. But there's a really interesting verse, and this stuck me this week. They had not understood about the loaves because their heart was hardened. So here's an amazing thing. When you keep your eyes on Jesus and you're mindful of him and you're mindful of all that he is and everything that he is yours, you start to go, this, you know, if he will never fail, then I'm not going to fail and he's not going to set me up for that failure. But what happens is you have people here, they have just seen an incredible miracle. They've seen the goodness of God. They've seen the power of God. Every single person in this room has seen that at some point in their lives. But it says that they didn't understand it because their heart was hardened. The word there is poru. It means completely lacking sensitivity or spiritual perception. Actually, the word, when you look at it, is like a callus. Okay? And callus, you know, I had to look it up, but a callus is a toughened... I thought, we all know what calluses are, don't we? But actually the definition of them is this, is a toughened area of skin which has already become relatively thick and hard in response to what? Friction, pressure, and irritation. And so what happens here is, in Mark chapter 6, they're seeing God, Jesus do incredible things, but their heart was calloused. That's the actual word. Their heart was irritated. There had been friction, repeated friction, and repeated pressure. And what happens is because that's where their heart was really at, that's why they didn't understand what they'd seen right in front of them. How do you stop that from happening? Behold Jesus. How do you stop your heart from this week becoming hardened and the irritation rubbing continually so that it becomes thick on your heart? Well, you have to completely and utterly, every day, reflect Jesus. Can I just say it to finish? Is that the flipping heck? Did anyone build an ark this morning? Look at that. Can I say, don't ever run away from where God has you right now? Preaching to myself. Don't ever run away from it. Because what happens is this. The process may seem overwhelming at times, but it's always so much safer to stay with your eyes on Jesus in that place than to get defensive, conservative, and go back to you. Embrace it. Remember what your purpose is and step towards it. Consider what Christ has called you for. Passionately pursue that purpose that he has for your life. Why? Because as you passionately pursue grace and Jesus, it will position you. It will position you for advancement. As soon as you start to retreat, then you're beaten. I want to say this, just in finishing, that this week, some of you need to take some time to breathe again. And in those moments, that was just the expression that I had in my head this week. Does this grace ever fail? Does it? I mean, is that too real? No? No. Somebody say yes or no, will you? Help me out. Does it ever fail? Will you ever not fall? I don't like where I am. So my option is, I don't like where I am. You've either put me here, and that's going to be failure for me. Or there's something here where you're taking me on a journey because right now your grace is setting me up to win and not to fail. Which one is it? And you know the truth of it is, I think you get to decide. I think today you get to decide. And my job is simply to encourage you that he has never set up one of his children for failure, ever. And so I need to take that on board and go, Lord, I'm going to reflect you. And in those moments this week where I feel the Lord is, where I feel like, Lord, did you put me here to make a fool of me? I'm going to simply reflect Jesus. I'm going to choose to keep my eyes fixed on him and go, as you are, so am I. In all of your beauty, all of your strength, in all of your holiness, in all of your forgiveness, in all of your purity, in all of your hope, in everything that you are, I'm really tired reflecting me and reflecting those around me. I want to reflect you because I am not just a shadow of you. I am a representation in all of it. You know, some people struggle to hear that. As he is, so am I. It's in the word. Because we're on our journey. But what it means is we're already equipped with everything that we need. We're already prepared. But it's just what I choose to reflect. So let me encourage you. Breathe a little this week. Stop trying. Start trusting. Get that big view of Jesus that if he has you here, it's because he loves you. And he's setting you up for advancement and for winning. But you get to choose it. You just simply get to choose. And it's not I get to choose to do, it's I choose to trust. I choose to rest. I choose to breathe, knowing that his grace never fails. Amen? Why don't we stop?